Blog Talk Radio.
This one is on you, Chris Pratt. Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and that clip you just heard was from Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, the sequel to, what was it, 2016's billion-dollar-plus hit, Jurassic World. The sequel brings back Chris Pratt, Bryce Dallas Howard, adds some new faces, Justin Smith, who was a character, actor I really, really like. And it's a film that it's not getting the same response as the last one did. There seems to be some dislike towards this sequel already, and it's only just opening this weekend. We'll have some updates on the box office to see how it did a little bit later on in the show, but it's not the goodwill towards this movie, towards the sequel, as there was for the first one, and maybe that's because we waited 20 years between Jurassic Park movies and people were eager for it. And now maybe some of that shine is has come off the rose here a little bit. So we'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes here with my buddy Wilson Morales of blackfilm.com. We'll talk about Jurassic World. We're talking a little bit about Comic-Con because that's coming up in a few weeks. And Wilson is my road dog when it comes to Comic-Con. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Chris Chibnall situation. I want to get his opinion on that. Talk about what we're expecting to see there this year. It's going to be a little bit light because there'll be no Marvel. But that leaves the door open to others to kind of fill in the gap. And maybe so I want to get his opinion on what we can expect to see out of Comic-Con. There's also a lot of news this week regarding Star Wars and upcoming spinoffs. Have they been put on hold or are they not? What's actually in the works? What's going on? We'll talk about that. Some stuff going on with the Black Widow movie. Marvel is finally moving forward on it. We knew that a few months ago, but now they're talking to directors. A lot of stuff going on here this week that we're going to jump into with Wilson as soon as he calls in. And also just kind of pick his brain on whatever he's got, because he runs blackfilm.com, and he does what I do every day. He dives into the news, and he posts about what he's interested in, and I want to get an idea from him what's big out there right now. I want to thank everybody who has continued to tune in to the show. Cinema Royale continues to do great. I appreciate that, everybody. And also all of you who have been listening to us on Blog Talk Radio or any outlet that you can find us. You can find us anywhere on every major podcasting station. You can find our show. I especially want to thank those of you who have been tuning in through Critical, the Movie Critics Network, which is our network, our independent network on Blog Talk Radio. We have a bunch of film critics around the country all together talking movies, giving our own takes on what's going on out there in the movie business. And, of course, mostly this week we're talking about Jurassic World. But one of the cool things about Critical is that everybody has their own spin. Everybody has their own idea of what's of what's important, what needs to be out there, what needs to be discussed. So, yeah, I like it. I dig it. And I want to thank all of you who've been helping that to grow as well. So thank you very much for that. It's been kind of a slow couple of weeks because there's been blockbusters almost every week for the last 2 months. So it's been like one major movie comes out, and then there's not a heck of a lot that comes out around it. When we talk about Jurassic World, and before me and Wilson jump into other stuff, I'll say a few words about another film that came out this week, which is The Catcher Was a Spy, which stars Paul Rudd. I saw that at Sundance, and it'll take me a moment to talk about that, so I'll get into that a little bit later as well, either while Wilson's on with us or maybe towards the end of the show before I get out of here. I'll give you guys my quick take on The Catcher Was a Spy. But I see Wilson is here, so let's go ahead and bring him on now. My homie, Wilson Morales of BlackFilm.com, my Comic-Con road dog now. What's going on, Wilson?
How much, man? How's it going?
I'm good, man. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a good Sunday. I guess we're back to blockbuster movies taking over the world,
yeah.
I guess, you know.
Yeah.
There was a couple of hiccups there, you know, in between Avengers and Jurassic. It was like, okay. Actually, Avengers, Deadpool, Solo. Yeah.
It's been almost nonstop. I mean, it's been almost nonstop.
Right.
We had a small break in between, but not much.
Yeah, but, you know, the question is, are any of these movies worth seeing again? You know, they come into the theaters,
right.
They're franchises, they're blockbusters, you know, there's anticipation. And then we as press either see them early on and say, oh, this is great. Or by the time we see it and it comes out, we're like, what's the next thing coming out?
Right. And that's something that we're facing with Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom right now, which, you know, is open this week. And already, like I was saying in the intro, already there seems to be, you know, there isn't the goodwill for this movie that there was for the first one, where I know people went to see the first one, you know, a couple of times and ran to go see it in IMAX. I'm not hearing that same buzz for this one. Bloom has come up the rose for Jurassic World and only two movies into the revival in the franchise. So, but you know, the plot, you know, I don't want to dive into too much because it is a tiny bit spoilery, but you know, basically the basic gist of it is that Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt's characters are called back to Isla Nublar to save the dinosaurs from an exploding island, and you know, once they do that, they tumble into a whole larger conspiracy involving a plan to sell dinosaur DNA, and that's really all you need to know. My initial thought on this, Wilson, while I was watching it, was that, one, I wasn't thrilled all that much. You know, there was no moment in the movie where I was blown away by the CGI or just the scope of the dinosaurs or anything. And the plot felt extremely familiar. Like, I felt like I had seen this movie before in the Jurassic Park franchise already, and it didn't seem like they were doing anything new. The only upside I had to it was that I really thought J.A. Bayona did an amazing job directing it, especially bringing in some of his horror elements. I mean, this is the guy who directed The Orphanage back in the day, and he brought in some of the horror elements to it, and that's when the movies really seemed to click for me. But otherwise, Jurassic World kind of felt like a step backwards for me. But what did you think about it?
You know, you're hitting it in a way right on the wall. You know, I think the first time it came back out 2 years ago or so forth, it was a return to the franchise. I don't know, I forget it had been over a decade since the last one had appeared. Mm-hmm. You know, and Universal said, okay, we can bring this franchise back. We can make a boatload of money. Obviously, it did. I think it's top five all time worldwide. And mm-hmm. So when you have a machine like that, you know, plays so much in terms of its plot, you know, the way you described it in a way is the way I think all of the films have been, you know,
yeah.
You know, there's always a sinister plot, you know,
yeah.
In terms of like saving the dinosaur, harvesting its legs. Let's see where we can go from this.
Yep.
And the only thing you can do that's different is what you mentioned with the director is, okay, bring in a new element of scare, you know. But for the most part, you're playing by numbers as far as what has worked with all of the films that's going to bring out the families, which is why it's done so well at the box office over time, and it continues to do so. There's a minor subplot in there that's intriguing, but for the most part, you know, you're getting by the numbers. You're getting the star-crossed lovers or the male and the female, as we've had seen in all of those movies. Why people are not talking about it? Because in a way, the novelty is off. 2 years ago, it was like, okay, let's see what they may have brought something new. Now, we're kind of going in there jaded, say, okay, just, you know, I'm in a fourth scare. I want to jump in my seat. I want to see this again. You know, and that's what you're going to get. And by the third week, you'll know if it has legs or not. You knew it was going to do well its first weekend. That's what expected. The second weekend, I don't think they have any competition this week, you know.
Sicario,
and then by the third week, we'll know if it has legs.
They have Sicario 2 to deal with next week, which isn't expected to be huge. But just looking at the box office, $150 million for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom this week, which is great. But the big thing is that, I mean, it had over $400 million internationally over the last 2 weeks because it opened early overseas. It now has $561 million overseas. It has $711 million already total. So this movie is obviously going to be huge. It's going to be over $1 billion. Just like the first one, whether or not it hits $1.5 billion, I think like the first one did, I don't know. But it's obviously going to be another huge sequel. And no matter what we say about the fact that it might not be as good as the first one, we're going to get Jurassic World 3.
In a way, and this is not to be funny, but like it has its audience for the same reason, you know, and I'm just thinking out loud, you know, let's say, for example, on a lower scale, Tyler Perry films. People may not like it, but he has his audiences. So he averages the amount that his audiences come to see. When you think of Jurassic, it has its audiences. When you're saying that it's made over $700 million within the last 2.5-3 weeks so far and continue to grow, it has its audiences. You know, people are going to go in there and see twice. What other family film do you have now outside of The Incredibles that people want, you know, that the whole family can go out and see, you know. And like I said, and this is on a worldwide scale. You know, sometimes you look, I remember growing up, and my pops used to get these movies from the store that, like, you look at the box cover, and you're like, what is this? Any of these movies that you don't need so much dialogue, you know? You know, dinosaur, kids running away, that's what they want to see, which is why it does well overseas.
Yeah, no, and exactly right. And dinosaurs, you know, will always be one of those things that are appealing to, especially to kids and families. Dinosaurs are always going to be, you know, one of those things that people flock to. And it's not as if there are a bunch of dinosaur movies out there. Jurassic pretty much has the lock key on those. So you know, these movies have appeal to them, and I get that. And plus, it has two really likable stars, Chris Pratt, because of his Marvel stuff. He could do wrong at this point.
You got to remember, Chris Pratt didn't Chris Pratt do Jurassic before Guardians?
I thought Guardians
was vice versa.
I could be wrong. I think it might have been vice versa, but I can't remember. I think it was fairly close though. Because Guardians of the Galaxy was, what year was that? 2014? Yeah, 2014. So that beats Jurassic World. That beats Jurassic World. So yeah, he did Guardians of the Galaxy first. Jurassic World was a year later.
Okay.
That was during that time when Chris Pratt was being mentioned for everything. It was like Guardians, Jurassic, Indiana Jones. It was like just put Chris Pratt in everything.
Yeah. He was the new cheap kid on the block that had star appeal.
And he hasn't had that movie that flops yet that makes people like reevaluate whether or not he's really as smart.
You know,
he hasn't had that movie yet.
Yeah,
I mean,
in between all that,
he did the Magnificent Seven too, and that movie was a hit too. So I guess the only exception would be Passengers. Passengers he did in 2016,
and that was a hit financially.
He hasn't had that movie that's tanked yet, and he hasn't done all franchise movies. There's not a musical that. So he's proving himself. I think he's a big reason why these movies, Jurassic World movies, will continue to success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, he needs to, you know, obviously his people are putting him in a state where, you know, let's just take blockbuster, 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 to he may get to a point where he says, okay, let me scale back now. Let me see if I can do a dramatic film where people now see me as his leading actor. Can I lead into a dramatic film that, you know, reinvents myself? Because remember, prior to these blockbuster movies, he was in a lot of movies that you forget. Like, oh, that's right, Chris Pratt's in that movie too.
Yeah. And I don't know, even if in movies like Moneyball, and he was in Zero Dark Thirty, you know? He did other roles, but do we want to see him go back to other films like that again? I don't know if we do. I think we want to keep seeing him in these larger-than-life roles playing the hero, the smart-aleck hero. That seems to be his niche, and I think it would be a huge thing for him to do otherwise.
He was just a character.
No, he wasn't.
Do you remember him in Wanted?
Yeah.
Angelina Jolie and James McAvoy. He was just like the third wheel, but now he's the first wheel.
Yeah, he was in Delivery Man next to Vince Vaughn, you know, his buddy. He was in Her. Remember that? He was in Her. He's been in a lot of stuff. But usually he used to be the second fiddle, and now he's the guy. And I don't know if there should be a move to make him not the guy. I don't think they should move to put him in romantic comedies or anything like that. I think Passengers was the closest they should get to ever doing that for a while. Like, Passengers is a romance, but it's a high concept romance. It's a sci-fi romance. It's different for him. I think that's about as close as they should get to putting him in like a traditional romance movie. I don't want to see him in those roles.
I don't think he's gotten to the point where, like, you know, he could do a film that's not a franchise and say, where the audience is going to say, I want to go check out the new Chris Pratt film. You know, that he's the go-to guy, you know. It's almost like Ryan Reynolds, you know. Like, Ryan Reynolds has a certain appeal that you'll say, I can go see it, because he's got a bit of quirkiness to him. I don't think, you know, Chris Pratt, for the most part now, is doing the big blocks. You know, he's lost the weight. He's more toned. You know, he's the studio guy that, like, you know, for the most part, he's taking over what Channing Tatum was doing. Because Channing Tatum, before Chris Pratt, was the guy. But Channing Tatum has scaled back a bit.
Which is ironic, because they were in 10 years together just a few years ago, where Chris Pratt played his buddy, his best friend. It was Channing Tatum and Chris Pratt. But going back to Jurassic World, though, I mean, where do you think this franchise goes from here? Because, like I said, we are getting a third movie. What do you think is best for them to do now? Because do you think they should make, like, course correct in any way? I mean, the box office says otherwise, but critical response says, yeah, they should probably do some retooling. What do you think?
It's a matter of, you know, you're not going to play with what does well for you. You know, you're going to retool it to a certain extent, but not so much. You know, when you're making $1 billion, which is what we know is going to happen, you know, and you look at the state of studios, you know, there's a bigger picture at play. You look at Disney, you know, between Star Wars and Marvel and Pixar, you know, they're generating these $1 billion films. So every other studio has to play catch up. So for Universal, their one franchise is, or actually they have two franchises. They have Jurassic and Despicables. You know, so they have to be in a position where, like, at the end of the year, when those numbers come in, and Disney's saying that they've made, you know, $5 billion at the box office, you can't be so far behind. So Jurassic is going to bring in that 1.5 along with any other movie. Last year, they had a great year when they had, you know, the Fast and the Furious movies, Get Out doing unsuspecting $200 million, Split, they had a hell of a year. So going forward, in terms of what the next movie is going to bring, you're not going to reinvent the wheel so much. You're just going to play by the numbers, and it's going to probably be somewhere between 2 or 3 years before we get the next one. And they're going to, you know, systematically play it where obviously they're going to do well over the summer. People are going to go see it. They may introduce 2 or 3 more dinosaurs that people care about, as opposed to the T-Rex that we always see, you know.
But that's what they did this time.
The T-Rex.
That's what they did this time, though. They put out a new super dinosaur, you know. And I was just like, all this stuff just feels so like been there, done that. I mean,
you know,
it seems like the best thing for this thing to do is to go fully, you know, just go fully into horror. You know,
they
forget
can't
all this other
they can,
stuff.
They can't afford an R rating. They know that. They can't afford an R rating. You know, you go R rating with this, you might as well just be like any other movies that we're probably getting on Screaming Link to that nobody will care about.
Yeah.
You know,
the thing that I'm concerned about with this next one is that they're bringing Colin Trevorrow back to direct it, which I don't know why they're doing that. I mean, it just seems like a mistake. I don't understand why people keep putting their faith in Colin Trevorrow. I mean, I liked him for Safety Not Guaranteed, but that was an indie film that cost nothing, and he went beyond, you know, its budget, you know. But I don't know. He seems like he's the weak link, and like in everything he's doing here, it seems like Bayona did such a good job with this one that, you know, he's like the best part of this movie. That going to Trevorrow kind of worries me.
Yeah, well, then again, it's like you look at the other, you know, I don't remember who directed the second or the third films of Jurassic. We know Spielberg did the first one. Who did the second and the third?
Well, Joe Johnston, you know? did the third one.
You know, and at the end of the day,
Spielberg did the first two. And then Joe Johnston did the third one.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, no one remembers Joe Johnston doing the third. I'm suspecting that you're probably looking in front of your computer.
Yes, they do. People remember Joe Johnston did the third one because they remember that the third one was Joe Johnston that did it. But the second Jurassic Park wasn't great. Now I'm Steven Spielberg. So, I mean, you know, I mean, not everybody's perfect. I get that. But I just don't. And apparently it was Spielberg who requested that Trevorrow come back to direct the third Jurassic World movie. So maybe he sees something that I just feel like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I love what Bayona brought to the table, Fallen Kingdom. Even if I thought the story, the biggest problem I have with Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is the story. It's familiar. It seems extremely thin. Major, and maybe you picked on this too, Wilson, there's this major revelation about the human characters. One of the characters in the movie. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, you know, and that's an interesting
yeah. And,
you
and,
know,
and
way
they don't
to
do
it
anything. They did nothing with it. It didn't even matter. Like, it was like,
yeah,
I mean, it might be holding it for the third movie, but that's not something that should just be glossed over. That's an entire movie.
Nah. In some terms, if you can understand, it was like a red herring, like a bluff in a way. Like, you kept teasing it, and we as an audience who have been fans of the franchise kept thinking back to see, like, what could they be talking about? Who can they be talking about? You know, to by the time, you know, it's revealed in a way, we're like, okay, they threw this in there, but it doesn't really affect the story so much.
Yeah, it doesn't affect the story at all. It makes no difference to the story. In fact, they didn't need to do it. If that was something that they intend to do something with, they might as well just intended to, they might as well wait it until they intend to really focus on it. Don't do it now and then just throw it out there and then just have, and then just forget about it. Cause that's what they did. They act like it didn't matter and it didn't exist. And I was like, well, why say it? Why reveal it? So yeah. Stuff like that. Just,
how many writers is this? How many writers was on this project? Was it one or two?
I don't remember how many are on this one. I'm not sure. Yeah. I know it was Trevorrow. I think it was Trevorrow and Connolly again. They did the first one too, but I think it was them again. Yeah, it was just those two again. So,
you know, so it's like somewhere along the line, they had a common plot, and then you have to work around that plot. You know, like we need a moment where the dinosaur, and it's got to be obviously a setting where you're going to have multiple animals, you know, a setting where, you know, obviously they're running. You know, left
that's
and right, you know, so basically, you know, it's not just so much the characters, it's the location where all these things can take place, you know, so I guess as you're doing this, you know, I don't know where you could go unless you change the dynamic. You know, I'm thinking about the zombie movies. What was that? There was a good zombie movie I saw recently, an Asian film. I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about. On a train.
Sure.
You know, do you remember what the title that was?
Yeah.
I remember about that was that, like, okay, we've seen plenty of zombie movies, but this one was different. You know, so I think when you do a Jurassic movie, you know, that was it. You know, so when you think of a Jurassic movie, it's like, okay, if you change the location and, you know, and I guess the characters, we'll see it in a different way. Because as you said, you know, there's plenty of zombie movies, but you just got to have the right setting and the right characters.
The thing is, Jurassic, falling in setting time. So if you heard that should make that should take the franchise in a new direction. So I'm hoping that is the case. I'm hoping that that's what they go with and they run with it and really take that idea as far as it can go. Cause these movies have been stuck in this same framework for so long. I'm tired of it. All right. So, you know, that said, you know, people are going to watch it and still get entertained by it. I just feel like this is the most forgettable. This is more forgettable. You know, like I saw it and now I have no desire to go see it again. You know, it was perfectly fine to sit there through, but I don't want to go back to go see it again. You know what I mean? Kind of going back to what we were talking about in the very beginning. I have no desire to see it twice.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things that, like, you see it, you got it, you got the gist of it. I can watch it again when it's on TV.
Right. It'll make good background noise working.
Yeah. You know, at some point, you know, you're going to just be home and you're like, okay, I can watch this again because there's nothing else on.
Yeah. It's what I call a background movie. Like, while I'm sitting here at my desk working, I have that on and I can periodically look up at it and it doesn't distract me, you know. It's, you know, it's one of those movies. But anyway, all right. So let's take a quick break. You and I are going to talk a little bit more because we got some Comic-Con stuff to talk about and some other things that I want to pick your brain on. So let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with my buddy Wilson Morales. Buddy Wilson Morales of blackfilm.com. How are things going over there at Black Film right now, Wilson?
We're good. You know, between films and TV season right now, there's a lot of work to be covered. Obviously, this past weekend, you've had the return of Luke Cage. So that's always there. And I think during the summer season, huh?
I'm talking to the director tomorrow, actually, about that.
Yeah. So between Luke Cage and, you've got, Ava DuVernay returning with Queen Sugar. And, there's a lot of talent that are doing TV that play out during the summer course. You know, because when you think about the summer, in terms of films, you basically get, one black actor here, one black actor there. You know, it's not like
yeah.
That's why when you think about, why Black Panther did so well, because there was more than one or two black folks in it.
How did they not find a place for Omari Hardwick in that cast? I've been trying to ask that question for months. I was like, where was Omari Hardwick's role in Black Panther? Because he's in every black movie, so how is he not in that one? He must have been in there. He was probably a random Wakandan soldier, foot soldier, and we just didn't know.
He's also a name. You look at that cast and you say to yourself, do we know Winston Duke would be a big name? Do we know, if Get Out had not done so well, Daniel Kaluuya would just be a role player.
Right.
He'd just be a role player. Letitia Wright, role player. But she stood out more. So between Daniel Kaluuya, Winston Duke, Letitia, and Danai, obviously she has the Walking Dead fame. The film had relatively more newcomers than you can imagine who became basically household names based on the amount of people that have seen it, and so when you look at, Omari Hardwick, he's got his own thing with Power that, as an actor, you'd say, why would I want to take a smaller role in a film like this, when I got my own thing going on with Power.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Comic-Con, because you and I are going to be heading there in a few weeks. Are you excited yet? Are you excited for Comic-Con yet, or is it still too far away?
No, it's still too far. I literally,
Nice.
I booked halfway the trip. I booked the one way. I booked the trip to get there. I've not booked the trip to come home yet.
I did the same thing. Normally, I book both. Round trip. This time I did it halfway. I was like, because the trip back because I was going to do Southwest, because I usually like Southwest. The trip back through Southwest was super expensive. So I was like, I'm just going.
Yes. Yeah, you're not kidding. So the trip going over there, I was able to use my frequent flyer mile points, and I did it yesterday because in the span of a day, if anybody has points, they went from flying to San Diego straight for 12,000 points to 20, and then the following day hit to 30. So I was able to do it for 20, which is actually not bad. But I'm smart enough. What I do is I think San Diego, they treat San Diego Comic-Con like it's the Super Bowl. So their flights are always expensive.
Yep.
So I just normally go to L.A. and take Amtrak down.
Is it cheaper that, though? Is it cheaper?
It's so much cheaper. So much cheaper because you can, for anybody who's listening, they go to Comic-Con or I'm planning to go to Comic-Con, it's cheaper to go to L.A. because there are more flights to go to L.A. and take an Amtrak down or drive down if you got friends or whatever, than booking it straight to San Diego, because when you're leaving from San Diego, there are very limited options going back, so it's better to go out of L.A., major airport, and you have plenty of times to go back home, wherever you're coming from.
Do you Amtrak back to L.A. and then fly out of there also?
Yeah, because Amtrak one way, Amtrak back to L.A. is, I think, depending on when you book it early, anywhere between 25 and 32. And if you're able to get your flight could be anywhere, a round-trip flight. Let's just say, for example, 2 years ago, I got a round-trip flight to L.A. for $240. $240, and you take – and even if you, obviously double the round-trip Amtrak tax, you add another $50 of it. So you're basically paying $300 to go to L.A., take an Amtrak down, and you get back on the Amtrak. The thing about the Amtrak is you want to get out of Dodge right away because it's super crowded, on that Sunday at the 3 o'clock mark. You know, so you just want to get back.
You know?
But it's doable. It's doable as opposed to when you're in San Diego. You know, sometimes, let's say, for example, if you're leaving to go back to New York, you only got two times. They either give you a 10 o'clock flight or you got, like, a late, super, like, 8 o'clock flight, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, maybe you want to hang out for an hour or two in San Diego, get to, you know, where you're not working so much and you just want to enjoy the scenery, go through, you know, maybe get a couple of more items, and then gradually go home as opposed to, like, you know, your flight at 10 o'clock, therefore you got to be at your airport at 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Crazy. But we're going to be there. We're going to be there at Comic-Con. It's going to be a little bit light this year because there's not going to be any Marvel, which, you know, I'm hoping means that there'll be less people crowding into Hall H. Of course, it's not what's going to happen. There'll just be people have a slightly easier time getting in, I guess. But you and I will be there. Let's start off talking about this Chris Hardwick situation. Have you been paying attention to this?
I was in Miami last week when that, you know, obviously when that stuff went down and, you know, obviously, you know, we're in this climate right now where if you're named, you know, you're guilty. And I didn't even read the full text of the story to fully comment on it.
So I read it that morning and I was like, I read it because I was like, I recognized her, you know, her name, Chloe Dykstra. So I knew who she was. You know, she's a popular, you know, person amongst the geek circle. So I knew who she was.
Is she Lenny's daughter? On the side note, is she Lenny's daughter?
I honestly don't know if she is or not. I've never really looked into her life that much. I don't think so. No, she's not. He's not. She's not. I knew who she was, and I was reading it, and I didn't know what the story was about. I was reading it. It just popped up on my feed, and I was reading. I was like, "Oh shit, okay." And basically, she goes through, you know, her relationship with Chris Hardwick, and that it was one filled with emotional and physical abuse. And, you know, and it read pretty true to me, pretty accurate to me. And yeah, but you know, in terms of like her emotions, it read accurate. But I don't know. Obviously, I don't know details about the relationship for real. But you know, Chris Hardwick is the guy at Comic-Con. You know, you and I are going to be in Hall H, you know, on Friday and Saturday at least. And, you know, and you can't escape him. He's there all the time. He's hosting the biggest panels there. If, you know, this cloud hanging over him, he's lost. He's already lost. Or he's losing. You know, Talking Dead has been postponed and he's lost a couple panels at Comic-Con. I don't think he's lost everything. But he darn well might by the time Comic-Con rolls around. I mean, this could be a huge change if this keeps going.
You know, the thing I always say when these things are happening and the person's named and, you know, you always don't want to read this stuff. And I go, as bad as these stories are, the thing I say, and not to defend anyone, is does it rise to the level of losing their entire career, you know, of losing their job? You know, I've read stories of failed relationships, you know, that if there's a case where, you know, in Chris Hardwick's case where I think it was implied, I haven't read it, as I stated, that he prevented her from, you know, gaining work in the business professionally, yes. But if it's a matter of him, you know, being a douchebag boyfriend, and obviously because he's married now, and I think this was something that his wife is defending him, with what happened between those two, does it rise to the level of him losing, you know, his entire career? You know, that's the question I see, you know, because we've obviously gone from the worst that it could be with Harvey Weinstein. And it's trickled down from there. You had a guy who basically abused his power and position, you know, to the worst, you know, way you can imagine. And every other scenario is just, you know, can it get lower than what Harvey, can anything top what Harvey has done? You know, and you're getting all these sorts of stories, you know, where there have been individuals who've been in longstanding positions like Matt Lauer and Charlie Rose, you know, to guys like Chris Hardwick, they're like, okay, is anyone else coming forward with a story? Because basically, this is one story, one particular case, as opposed to multiple women coming out. You know?
Right.
So now we're at a, where are we now? Where, like, if you're just named, you know, if it's multiple people, then that means there's a set, there's a pattern behavior there. You know, but yeah, if, when it's one person, that, and I'm not trying to defend him, you know, I've not read the entire story. I say, like, if, you know, does it rise to the level of him losing all of his positions that he's basically worked so hard for?
Yeah, and it doesn't look like it's going to get to that level yet. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he, I don't know about his dating history or anything like that. So, I mean, I don't know anything about stuff like that, but it doesn't seem as if anybody else is coming out to see anything else bad about him, as far as I know. I know he was engaged to Jacinda Barrett for a while, and I think he had another, he was involved with another actress at some point. You know, but, and maybe they'll come out and say something in the future, but as of right now, it seems like it's just Dykstra who's saying this stuff. So it might not reach the level where he, you know, where he becomes such a pariah that he loses everything. Like I said, I think he's only lost his AMC and BBC panels at Comic-Con, but I'm sure he'll be there when Warner Brothers is up there on Saturday. You know what I mean? I'm sure he'll be the guy hosting that. So it'll still be weird if he's not there hosting The Walking Dead, because that's his thing. If he's not hosting The Walking Dead panel, that's going to look really weird. But
yeah, yeah. Well, the question, and if you're Chris Hardwick, do you address it at Comic-Con? You know, do you address it, or
definitely
you know, like what would be the approach? Do you go there as if nothing's happened, and you're like, oh, you know?
I think you have to, but the problem is, you know, I think any time that you're a person who's in the limelight like this, and something bad, something very public happens, and you have to face a potentially rowdy crowd at Comic-Con, it's always sketchy, man. You don't know what their reaction is going to be. I know that people act like they like Chris Hardwick. I think he's a douche. I've always have. And I've never liked him when he's – you know me. I've never liked him when he's at Comic-Con. He's always like my least favorite part. If I were of a different sort, I would boo the shit out of him when he came up there on the mic. If I wasn't there to work and be professional, I would be an a-hole and boo the crap out of him when he got up on stage. But journalists, yes, we're going to be a lot of us there. There's going to be a lot of other people there who might take that advantage and might just boo him. And there is the potential for an ugly scenario. If depending on the crowd,
oh yeah,
it just
you know, that's the thing. You're gonna get, you know, because of the crowd is huge. You know, you're gonna, yep, I find that you're gonna get somebody to go out there, whether it be a guy or a female, you know, that just wants to say it, either for the attention or for the support of Chloe. You know, especially since, yeah, she's cost, you know,
she's gonna be there at Comic-Con. Right, and she might be in there in Hall H, to be honest, and certainly her friends are going to be there. Her friends in the press, you know, I know her, I know of her, and I know people who are friends with her. They're going to be in Hall H. You never know what can happen, man. I just for the sake of things speeding along, you know, during the course of the event, because it's a long, you know, those 2 days in Comic-Con Hall H are long. I hope that nothing happens that delays things or holds things up, but there is that potential. So, you know, we'll just got to wait and see, but it could be really, really interesting, man. That's all I'm going to say. It could be interesting. But you know, what are you looking forward to seeing at Hall H? Because we're not getting Marvel. We're going to get Warner Brothers on Saturday, and they're probably going to be the biggest event of the weekend. We're going to get some Wonder Woman 1984 footage, apparently. You're going to get Shazam, I think. We're going to get Aquaman, of course. But then you also have 20th Century Fox. You have Sony. You have other companies out there.
Well,
what are you looking for?
I think, you know, I think Warner Brothers, knowing what they do when they open up all age with that panel.
They've had better panels than Marvel. They've had better panels,
you know,
than Marvel, let's be honest. Their presentation is better than Marvel.
Yeah, so you obviously, you know, we're going to see Aquaman. You know, obviously they know, like the world knows, that Wonder Woman is their saving grace. So bringing her there, sells that, you know. And then it's a question of, like, they've got so many DC titles that they've been bringing up, but nothing's been talked about. Are we going to get a guaranteed Batman film? You know, what's going on with The Flash? You know, with right. Green Lantern? You know, they've been talking about, like, Harley Quinn, Joker. Does Ava DuVernay come in there to talk about New Gods? Like, are they going to put that together? You know what I'm saying? Like, they've got so many of these titles there have not been, you know, that's the thing about Warner Brothers. Like, you hear these titles, and they've been going around for years. When do they start production? You know, so that's more of a, that would be more intriguing, more, like, satisfying if we can find out, like, oh, okay, is Ben doing Batman? Is it a go? You know, let's stop with the games. You know, are we getting a Flash? You know, obviously, I don't think Cyborg thing's happening. And, you know, does Jared Leto, show up to, you know, to say, I'm doing Joker or Harley Quinn? Or is there something new that we haven't even heard about yet?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what we're really going to be interested in finding out. I know Warner Brothers has said they're not going to be, you know, putting out all these titles and giving dates to these projects that aren't going anywhere. Because that's been my biggest complaint about DC Entertainment is that they keep these projects keep popping up out of nowhere in the middle of random interviews. And you're like, what is this project? And they never go anywhere. And, you know, but when they've made announcements, because look, you remember last year, they put out a whole slate, you know? They put out a whole slate at their presentation. And that slate is pretty much blown up at this point. Flash is, we don't know where that is yet. We don't know where Green Lantern Corps 2020, we guess. Cyborg, no. You know, so it's like, do they bother? It's like a double-edged sword. It's like we both want to see them put out a hard slate that they're going to move forward with, but when they've tried that, it hasn't worked. So maybe they don't do anything.
Yeah, I think back to Marvel when they first announced that Black Panther was going to come out in November of 2017. Then it got pushed back, but at least you kind of got an idea what they were doing. You know, with so many titles on the DC, you just don't know. You know, at least the thing with Marvel is all of their films fall right into the other, into the next film. You know, like all these other previous films led to the Avengers, you know, and to the Avengers Age of Ultron and so forth. You know, with Warner, are they structuring their films to lead into the other, or are they just standalone films?
Right. And it does feel like Warner Brothers is still throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. I don't like the idea of this separate banner for these origin-type movies. I get where they're coming from. But I just I believe in simplicity for the audience's sake. You know, I believe, like, because the audience will get confused. They're confused by the Star Wars spinoffs. You know what I mean? And those aren't that complicated, but audiences are confused by them. You know, where does this fit? What is this about? And I think that's a part of the reason why Solo failed this past month. But you know, and Warner Brothers is taking that a similar route intentionally, and I don't quite get it. I want to move on to a couple other things for the Young Comic Con and get your opinion on them real quick. this issue with the Star Wars spinoffs now, speaking of Star Wars. So we heard a rumor that they were being put on hold, which, you know, in the wake of Solo's failure, the rumor to lose about $50 million on it overall, that the future spinoffs have been put on hold. That means Obi-Wan, Boba Fett, put on hold. Now we're hearing that Boba Fett is probably still moving forward, but it's being downsized maybe. James Mangold is still attached to direct that one. And the Obi-Wan movie, it's even more up in the air, and Stephen Daldry may not be involved in that one anymore. What are your thoughts on the future of the Star Wars spinoffs, and what have you heard?
Well, you know, I actually like Rogue One, you know.
It's my favorite movie of that year.
You know, I really like that one. I think with Solo, you know, and why it failed in a way, is because I don't think audiences connected to Alden. You know, it's like people don't know who he is. You know, by the time Solo came out, from my perspective, Donald Glover was the bigger name only because in the 2 weeks prior to its release, Donald Glover had Atlanta. You know, then he was on SNL, and then he released the This Is America video. You know, then he's at the Met Gala. So he had a wide range of visibility that people are familiar with. Plus, you know, they know Lynn, you know, so he also got the blessing of Billy Dee Williams. You know, so when you talk about Alden, you know, we haven't seen him, you know, anywhere else yet. You know, it's like he's done films, but nothing blockbuster-wise where wide audiences knew who he was, you know?
Yeah.
And even when you look at Emilia Clarke, for all intents and purposes, you know, granted, a lot of people watch Game of Thrones, but not everybody, you know? Not everybody has it there. So I think it was too much hype. They needed to build him up, you know? For the same reason when you looked at Chris Pratt, we had already seen him before in smaller films, you know, and then obviously Guardians built them up for Jurassic and so forth. I think, you know, you put in Alden in there, you know, by the time, when you think about Black Panther, by the time Chadwick Boseman had that part, we knew him already from Jackie Robinson and from James Brown. You know, so he wasn't some just new guy playing Black Panther. He already had the blessing because of the previous successes he had. So when you're looking at going forward.
That definitely helped.
So going forward with the Star Wars stories, you know, Boba Fett's always been this lovable, mysterious character. And I'm a little worried that, like, you know, for what people didn't know about Boba Fett, you know, they're going
to be,
there's always
going to
be like,
I don't want to learn more.
Like, yeah, you don't want to more. Less is great.
Yeah.
Less is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is
it's
the
like
same thing about Lando.
Like Wolverine, less is more. I actually want to learn more about Lando, but that's because I think Lando is the most interesting character in Star Wars that they've never really expounded upon. But in terms of Boba Fett, no. But Lando isn't about mystery. Like, I don't think that when I look at Lando, I don't wonder. I don't find him mysterious. Whereas I look at Boba Fett and I look at him and I do think mysterious, but I want that mystery to be retained. I don't want to lose it. It's like Wolverine. I know everything there is to know about Wolverine now, so he's no longer mysterious, and he's no longer as cool as he used to be. And I don't want that to happen to Boba Fett. I just think it's a bad idea. I actually think Obi-Wan movie is a bad idea, too, but that's for a whole other reason. Moving on, the Black Widow film. The three directors were named as possibilities for the Black Widow movie, and I find them all really exciting. Kate Shortland, who directed Berlin Syndrome and Lore. Ama Asante, who I know you're a fan of. She did Belle and a United Kingdom, which is one of my favorite movies from a couple years ago. And Maggie Betts, who did A Novitiate last year, another really good movie. I like all three of these names as possible directors for Black Widow. Do you have a favorite of the three?
I'd probably go with Ama. Because in the three films that I've seen with her, obviously she throws an intrigue. You know, they're all, you know, I haven't seen the first name you mentioned, but I saw Novitiate, you know, so they're all three accomplished directors. So the question is, when you think of those three names, they're going to have to reinvent themselves with Black Widow. Are we getting more of a structured layer drama? You know, because obviously with Black Widow, now you have to involve some action in there, you know, to see, you know, can these directors bring in the level? We know they can bring in the drama, but now they have to bring in a lot more intensity into it, like in terms of action, you know, because that's
right.
The thing. Like,
they're all good with like period type movies, which makes me think that Black Widow might be set in the past, which would be great if it's set like in the 90s or the 80s or something like that. I think that would really work. And I think all three of these directors would be good at that, especially Ama Asante.
Yeah, as I mentioned, they can do the period pieces. They can definitely do the ensemble pieces because that's what Maggie did it well with Novitiate. Ama's done it well with some of the films that she's had, you know. So that's taken care of. Now the question is the story, where does it go? How much action is involved? Because obviously we know Natasha, you know, played by Scarlett Johansson, loves to fight, you know. So how do they go about, you know, mixing in the dialogue, the tension, along with the action, and that's going to be a new take for them as a director, you know, doing so much of the action scenes.
Yeah. All right, running out of time here, so I want to get your quick take on a couple things here. Did you hear about the Last Jedi fan remake? that one person is trying to do, that one site is trying to do.
It's amazing how viral that went.
Yeah,
it's
and
amazing
they supposedly got $200 million from some unknown producers who would back it, and they've got a bunch of promised pledges now from fans. Now, bear in mind, none of these pledges are concrete because they took no financial information from anybody. So I could go there and pledge $200 million tomorrow, and they can never collect it. But this thing has gone super viral. They want to remake The Last Jedi in a way that appeals to everybody. Well, good luck with that.
That's the thing about Twitter. Twitter has a way of, like, you give the voice to the people and they will run with it. You know, that's the scariest thing about Twitter. It's like, wow, you know, we went from Jedi backlashes to people getting, like, you know, written articles about them in negative ways. Now just somebody goes, I want to remake it, and, you know, I'll retweet it and so forth. It's almost like watching, like, okay.
People buy into this crap. Don't they think for a second that, one, Lucasfilm would have to approve it, and two, they'd have to make totally separate contracts with every single actor in the movie to do it. I mean, it's like, you can't. It's like, it's not going to happen. It's just ridiculous. But this is what I called the Last Jedi derangement syndrome, because people have been so polarized by this movie. The people who hate it have gotten to this point where they despise it now. They are willing to believe that something like this could possibly ever happen, and that somebody actually would put it out there that they think they can do it. Ridiculous.
It's almost like thinking, what was that parody film with Bill Pullman? You know,
oh,
on Star Wars.
Yeah, I know. Oh, not Spaceballs. Spaceballs.
Is it Spaceballs?
Yeah,
Spaceballs. You know. You know.
Yeah, it's
you
ridiculous.
Could do something similar to that. You could do something similar to that. You know.
Right, and they should
or
do that. They should
know?
Do that.
A Mystery Science 3, Mystery Science 3000 version.
Right. They should do something like that, because this thing right here is never going to happen. All right, my man. We are coming down towards the end of the show. Here with my buddy Wilson Morales of BlackFilm.com. I want to thank you for joining me, man. This has been fantastic. Thank you, my friend.
It's good to be on.
Yep. And I will see you. Well, I'll probably talk to you long before then, but I will definitely see you in a few weeks at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
We're going to have some fun, man. We're going to tear it up this year.
SDCC.
You got to let me in on what parties you're going to. Ronnie's not coming, so I'm going to hang out with you. All right.
Okay, we'll talk.
All right, man. Everybody go check out blackfilm.com for all the latest. Wilson does a great job over there. So definitely go check out. Thanks a lot, man. I'll talk to you later.
Take care.
All right, bye. All right, and that brings us to the end of the show. I'm Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. Thank you for tuning in to Cinema Royale. You can find me every single day on punchdrunkcritics.com. Fridays, you can find me on News Channel 8 if you're in the DC area. Thursday mornings, you can find me on WCAO Morning News in Baltimore. And you can also find me on WCAA Around Town on Channel 26, PBS. Thanks again for tuning in to Cinema Royale.